This is Invest Talk, above average investing for the average investor. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. And now, here's KPP President, Money Manager, Steve Peasley.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the, Tuesday? Yes, already Tuesday edition of Invest Talk, July 29th. And we're heard on the radio up and down California, also streaming live, as well as investtalk.com, and of course the podcast subscribers worldwide. We appreciate everybody. Now, over the past few programs, we've been highlighting one of our six steps to success. It's a way to break down the elements and the process of creating and managing your invested dollars, your portfolios, your 401k, your IRAs. And the third step is protect. And which was part of the focus of our most recent wealth webinar is how to protect yourself from a down market. You know, could you have done that in 2000 and 2008? Surely. And now we're saying maybe there are ways to defend yourself, and maybe you should think about protection after this huge bull run we've had. I'm not saying get out of the market. I'm saying reduce some risks. And everything has risks. Don't think, you know, you go to buy a CD and you make what, 0.1%, 0.2%, 0.3%, I don't know. When inflation is 2% a year, you're losing money. So there's always risk. It depends on how much risk you're comfortable with taking and how much reward you want. So when you ask people, do you want to take a lot of risk or a little risk, everybody's going to say, well, I don't want to take a lot of risk, but I want to make a lot of money. Well, of course. But those two don't go together. Taking risk, making a lot of money, you got to take a lot of risk to make a lot of money, because you're risk losing money. If you want to make a little money, you can take a lot less risk. There's a balance there. There's a way to manage it. And that's what we're talking about. You manage the risk. And if you want to protect your portfolio, you have to understand the risk in your portfolio and then understand how to protect it. Now, when our first focus I meet with people, is I figure out what their risk level is. We have a system on our website now called Riskalyze, and you can go in there and answer a few simple questions, and it'll tell you what kind of risk you want to take. Give you a score from 0 to 100. 100 meaning you take a lot of risk, and 0 meaning you don't take any. So, and it give you a score, and then you can actually put in your portfolio, and it will score that and tell you how risky that is. So you know that what kind of risk you want to take and what kind of risk you are taking. Isn't that smart? Isn't that what you want to do? Kind of know where you are and how both you personally and in your personal life, how much risk. And it's very good questions they ask. It's not like, you know, just a simple, and they're not a lot of questions, but they would ask questions besides how old you are and when you want to retire, if you were going to get 30% return, if the risk was to get 30% return, possibility of getting 30% return, would you take the possibility of 10% loss? Yes or no? So you get a 30% return or a possibility of 10% loss, would you take that risk? If you say no, then it'll go to another question. How about a reward of this versus a downstroke of that? And it kind of measures where you are, you personally. I think that's really good that you do know where you are. Anyways, managing risk, how to identify risk, how to take care of hedging some of that risk off so you're not taking a risk, all those kinds of things is what we need to talk about. And if you want to talk about it, give me a call. But let's first go to our phones and answer a question that came in before the program. And that's our 24-hour listen line, 888-99-CHART, anytime.
Hi, this is Tim. I'm calling from Boston, and I listen to you on podcast. I'm calling about Stericycle. That's STCL, Stericycle. And I'm looking at buying Stericycle. I think that they've got pretty good earnings. I'm just looking at this for a buy point. Thanks. I'll listen to you on podcast.
Okay, that's Stericycle, S-R-C-L, I think is the symbol, S-R-C-L, I think he said S-T. But Stericycle, Inc. Is a $10 billion company, provides regulated waste management and related services for hospitals, blood banks, and pharmaceutical companies. Okay, so all that blood testing needles and pads and, you know, things that get blood on them or mucus or whatever, they recycle that stuff, okay? They made $3.76 a share in 2013, $3.76. This year, $4.25, that's a 13% increase. And next year, estimated $4.79, that's another 13% increase. And sales have been going up 10 to 20% every quarter. So it's very solid, very consistent. It has grown its sales more every year per share. I mean, earnings every year, growing its earnings every year per share. And that's why the PE is at 29. It's never traded below a PE of 23 because it's had that kind of success. Very significant, solid growth. Now, they have debt, 73%. Management owns 4%. Mutual funds have been net sellers for the last year. Net sellers. And you'll see the stock is very, I don't want to say erratic, but volatile. Very volatile. It's at $118.80 today. Going to make $4.79. So, what is that, 23, 24 PE going forward? If it doesn't move at all from it. Looking at a chart, it's had a triple top and made in the beginning of July. And it's haven't struggled breaking through that. This is the third time it's been up at $119. It's $118.80. Almost 120, three times in the last year, and each time it's hit that, it's fallen off. So from a chart, it's a very solid company, very good company. But from a charting point of view, you wouldn't want to buy it here. You either need to have it break above maybe 121 to see how far it can go, because then there'll be no very little resistance, or you buy it when it falls back down in the 112 area, $112. You wait for a pullback of, you know, 5 to 10%. And that's where you would buy, because it has strong support. It's kind of chattering in that channel right now. So I would be patient here. Good, solid company, though. Very good company. You want to be a buyer. You want to be an owner. But you want to own it at a less price. Return equity is 20%. All good. No dividend on this stock. But it's all very good. The company came out probably in 1996. So it's been around since then. And it's made very consistent money growth year over year, quarter over quarter. That's what makes it very attractive, and that's why it's expensive. Build your own theme-based ETF. Build your own. That's one of our talking points today. I also want to talk about a couple things. I mentioned before some time ago about the Dow theory. Does everybody know what that is? And if you don't, we're going to talk about it. I'll tell you what it is. And I want to particularly note the transportation sector. Have you seen what's going on in the transportation sector? And it's a little bit worrisome. We're going to talk about that. The 10-year Treasury yield, the federal government issued some bonds today. I want to talk about the 10-year Treasury yield and why it may go up to 4%. What is it now? Do you know what it is now? I'm going to tell you. I'm going to tell you the range it's been trading in and why some think it might go to 4% or more. And you're going to have tomorrow out our second quarter GDP numbers. Always important to know what's going on. And most experts are talking about huge rebound from the first quarter. You remember what happened the first quarter? We shrank. Our gross domestic product shrank 2.9%. And most experts before the first reading said there was going to be growth in the first quarter. Now remember, this is after the first quarter ended. People still expected the growth. And the initial read was up 0.1%, much lower than expected. But then it was revised downward on a final revision, down 2.9%. Do you know what the second quarter first number is estimated to be? And that's going to be out tomorrow, the first number. I'm going to talk about GDP and why the experts have been so off. There's a specific reason. Been so off, especially in the first quarter. Whether they'll be off in the second quarter, time will tell. They're expecting 3.1, but we'll talk about it. And if we have time, I would like to talk about a few other things. You see Twitter's numbers after hours. Stock is up over 30%. And Twitter lost a ton of value this year, a ton. What did the market do today? Did you see that too? Well, the Dow was down 70, the Nasdaq down only 2, and the S&P down 9. Now, there is no, you know, there's no worry part yet. There's, if you're looking at the S&P, you'll see it trading sideways for all of July. Now, it did make new highs in July, but it's given most of that back the last 3 or 4 days. And it's been sideways for the entire month of July. But it's not a downward trend either. But if you look a little deeper, there is an area of the market, an area of the market that is not doing very well. Do you know what area that is? Huh? Well, if you don't, I'm going to tell you. Take a look at the Russell 2000. Do you realize the Russell 2000 is below its December 31st number? And it's just now below the 200-day moving average? Is Russell 2000 the small cap stocks? It's an index of the small cap stocks. So it's below your December 31st high. Remember, all last year, market ran up. All indexes, almost every one of them. Now, here we are, July, end of July, and the small cap stocks are below, they're down for the year. Down for the year. Why that? Interesting things going on. Very unusual things, but also very interesting things. We're going to talk about a number of them here this hour. So if you're interested, you want to talk, give me a call. This is Invest Talk. The first step in assessing investment risks is to understand the types of risks that you're taking. Are you in the small Russell small cap stocks? If you are, you've had a bad year so far. You've given up some of last year's gains. Stocks, bonds, cash, all of it has risks. It's the kinds of risk and how much risk. So if you got a question about risk, give me a call. Number is 888-99-CHART.
As InvestTalk continues, we remind you of some of the resources available to our InvestTalk insiders. Steve has prepared a short ETF list. Sign up and get it for free right now on InvestTalk.com.
Okay, do you have an investment idea and you think you can build a better ETF than are out there? Well, you can. Build your own theme-based ETF. There is an online broker out there that allows you to build your own ETF up to 30 different stocks. And it's a portfolio, your portfolio you build, $250 minimum investment for you. Then after that, each individual who wants to invest along with you is like $9.95. You don't make any money on this, though. Don't think you do. This is an online broker who's letting you build your own portfolio. So you build your own portfolio, and you name the ETF, and it allows other people, this online broker, allows other people to invest in it. Guess how many they have of these? They're called motifs. There are 50,000 of them that has been created by users. 50,000 of these. So, now, don't think that this is a great investment idea or anything. It really isn't. You're buying into somebody. You have no idea who they are. You're buying into a theme. Now, if you can't find a theme in your popular ETFs out there, this is one way you can find a theme or build your own theme, and you can use it. An interesting idea. I just don't know if it's a smart idea. Because I don't know if I want to listen to somebody else out there who builds a theme that, you know, I would have to look at each individual stock that they have in there and do my own work to see if it's smart. Anyways, I thought it was an interesting idea. You can see the latest dates and locations for retirement views on InvestTalk.com. If you'd like to schedule an hour or hour at one of our satellite offices, you can do that. You click on schedule a meeting at investtalk.com. The listen line is open now at 888-99-CHART, and this is Invest Talk.
Now is a good time to call Invest Talk.
I had a question on my 401k.
We're here for you. What's your question? 888-99-CHART is how to reach Steve right now on Invest Talk. We thank you for subscribing to our podcast and listening every day. Do you know the difference between whole life and universal life insurance? Read Steve's paper, Understanding Life Insurance. It's yours if you're an InvestTalk insider. To sign up, just go to investtalk.com and look for Insiders. InvestTalk continues on this Tuesday. Don't try to be Warren Buffett, but don't miss topic on the next InvestTalk. 888-99-CHART is how to reach InvestTalk.
888-992-4278. Time to give me a call. Let's talk to Daniel in Palo Alto. Wants to talk about the Russell 2000. How you doing, Russell? Daniel?
Yeah, that's all right. Russell will work.
Okay, sorry.
You were just speaking about it. Was curious if now might be a good time to use one of the ETF hedges against the Russell, and if you're possibly doing that for your clients as one of your hedges. I know you mentioned you'd used gold and various other ways of protecting your investment.
Yeah, the quick answer is yes to both those questions. Yes, I think it's a good time to short the Russell, and yes, I am using the short ETF of the Russell 2000, not the 3000, everybody, the 2000, which is the small stocks. And because you asked about it, I will tell you the ETF short for the Russell 2000 is the symbol RWM.
Oh, that's great to know. Thank
you, sir. That's the ProShare short Russell 2000 exchange-traded fund, so you can correspond to the inverse of the daily performance of the Russell 2000. So that's the one we're using as a short. Now, don't misunderstand me, Daniel. My portfolio, my client's portfolio, my own portfolio is not full of Russell this short. It's just part of an overall managing the risk of the whole portfolio. And as you mentioned, I'm using gold as well. You know,
I hear you.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate the call.
Thank you, sir.
One of the reasons, everybody, I'm using gold as a hedge, and you do know what beta means. We've talked about beta before, and the beta of a stock is its relationship to the movement of the S&P 500. So a stock or an ETF that has a beta of 1 means that when the S&P 500 moves up, it moves up, and it moves up the same amount. If the S&P moves down, it moves down. So anything below 1 on a beta means that it doesn't move up or down as much as the S&P 500. So if you use a GDX, which is the Market Vector Gold Miners ETF, its beta is 0.36. So it really does not move in the relationship to S&P 500 barely at all. In fact, at times it moves in the inverse direction. But it does have a beta of 0.36, so it means if the S&P moves down 10%, this will move down a third of that, 3%. But in some cases, over time, gold will actually go up when the S&P goes down. And we've done many studies on this. And this is one of those times that gold will probably move up if the S&P moves down. So it's a hedge. But it also, gold has moved one of the best performing sectors this year. And gold has gone up when the S&P has gone up so far this year. And it's gone up when it's gone down. So it's not, you know, that's the kind of, when I say we want to hedge off some of the risk, well, that's the kind of thing you can do to hedge off some of the risk. Still invested, but not in the S&P 500 or in the stock market of the S&P 500 necessarily, because you're hedging yourself. Now, gold miners, this is the gold miners. Gold miners, you know, are stocks out there. But they move up and down more often with the price of gold, not with the S&P 500 move, not with the overall market going up and down. See how, that's just, you've got to think about what you're doing, that's all. And let's talk about the Dow theory. The Dow theory is a theory that goes back many years, and what it is, if the Dow moves up or down, the theory is that it has to be confirmed as a trend by the movement of the transportations, the Dow transportation. Okay, so the Dow's moving up and the Dow transportations are not. That means, under the Dow theory, that the market is going to turn around and go back down. It's not going to continue up, because there's no support by the transportation industry. Now, what is the basic theory behind this is that, well, if the economy is growing, then transportation should grow with it because you're moving things. You got the auto industry, you have trucking, you have deliveries, you have the airline industry. All should be busier if the economy is doing better. So when the economy starts to peak, that area of the market tends to move down. Well, what's the transportation doing now? Well, look at IYT. That's the ETF for the transportation index. It's gone down sharply for the last 3 days. If you compare the movement of that with the Dow, the Dow has gone down too, but not as much. So it's not an indication yet because it really hasn't broke trend yet. It hasn't gone down enough. But it is something that you can watch in the Dow theory to see if there's support. The transportation is important. UPS is one of the stocks in transportation. And UPS was down 3.5% today. That's a 2.5-month low for UPS. And it's below its 200-day moving average for the first time since December of 2012. So not last year. The year before, late that year, it was below its 200-day moving average. Remember, that's a long-term moving average, meaning the trend, long-term trend. So it's now just broke down, UPS, below the 200-day moving average. Why is that important? Because it's one of the major components of the Dow transportation. So is FedEx. What has it done? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 6 down days. And it's peaked about 8, 9 days ago. See, so these are the kinds of things you want to watch to judge what the overall market's doing to help you out. Why not try our premium newsletter for a month? There's new issue in the email box every Friday with a market commentary, portfolio management tips, a couple of stock ideas. To sign up, just go to investtalk.com. This is InvestTalk. We're here to help. Bring your money topic to me, 888-99-CHART.
You're listening to Invest Talk. Want to know more about investing in bonds? Are there risks? Good question. 888-99-CHART is how to reach through right now and ask it.
Our podcast listeners from all over the world download our program. If you'd like to join them, you can just subscribe for free on iTunes. If you have a question for me, you can always ask at 888-99-CHART.
Hello, my name is Tony. I'm from Cleveland, Ohio. Got a question regarding insurance. Recently married, and my wife is really into this whole life insurance policy. I'm more into getting term insurance and using the money to invest, say in a Roth or a 401k, you know, to increase our contributions or put it into another IRA, where she likes the security and the predictability of the whole life policy. That's really appealing to her. So I was wondering if you can give us some advice, maybe a rule of thumb when it comes to insurance and your return. Are those whole life policies realistic with their returns? Can you get a better return in the market over time? What's your thoughts on that? I'd appreciate it. Love the show. Listen to the podcast. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay, well, I do have an insurance background. For years and years I was in the insurance industry, and I will tell you I like term life much better than whole life or universal life. I think you can do a lot better. And taking the difference of premium, because term life is very cheap, taking that difference that you're going to pay for the whole life policy, the difference between term and whole life premium, and put that in the S&P 500 over the next 10, 20, 30 years, I think you'll be far ahead of the game and do a lot better. And you don't have to worry about the stability of an insurance company. Because insurance companies can go out of business. I just don't care for it. Now, there isn't, you know, I understand the guarantee fund. The insurance guys don't call me up and say, well, you didn't mention the guarantee fund that backs up the insurance companies, you know. Yeah. But you don't get all of your money back. It's a percentage. You don't insure 100%. And I don't like the costs. Salesmen love selling whole life. I mean, whole life and universal life because the commissions are very high. And since the premium is very low in term life, they don't like to push that too much. They're self-serving often, not everyone, but a lot of them. So I like the term life. I'd rather see you put the difference in your 401k in an index fund. That's tax deductible. You get a tax break on it. And you get the same, get the insurance that you need. I'm not against that. But I am for the term policy, which is much cheaper than the whole life universal life policy for the insurance part. And of course, try to tell your wife, of course the salesman's going to push you to a higher cost product because his commission is based on how much premium you pay. And I'm not saying they're trying to be dishonest or anything. And remember, it's a salesman. These contracts are complex. They only hit the highlights, and usually only the highlights that convinces you to buy them. Not the highlights that will tell you that there's this issue and that issue to worry about. That's my point. That's my opinion anyways. Let's talk about the 10-year yield. 10 years. Do you remember? Okay. There's a newsletter out there, and there's a guy, and I'm sure it's Holbert Digest, but he follows the bond buyers, the recommendation of percentage of bonds in newsletters, and he tracks this. Okay, right now the recommendation is for 54.7% bond exposure. That's the highest it's been in years. The last peak was 49.7%, and that was May of 2013. Remember, that's how much bond exposure these newsletters are recommending. Do you remember what happened in May of 2013? Remember, that was the last peak at 49.7. That's pretty high back then. Now it's 54.7. From that point on, from May of 2013 to the end of the year, the 10-year Treasury was yielding at the high point of 1.63%. And then it went to 2.9. Now, for those people who are not familiar with bonds, as the yield goes up, the value of the bond goes down. So the bonds fell, okay, fell sharply during that period of time. And that was the peak when everybody was recommending that you needed bond exposure. Okay, so now what's happening today? Well, today, as I told you, the recommendation is 54.7%. Because what happened from the end of this year till now, bond values have gone back up. They topped at 3.03%. Now they're 2.5%, 2.46% for a 10-year bond. So they've gone down. The yield has gone down. Bond values have gone up. And because bond values have gone up, these newsletters are recommending more and more exposure to bond values. Now, I'm just pointing out, the last peak was 49.7, May 2013, and it fell sharply after that point. Now they're recommending about 54-55% of your portfolio should be in bonds, and that's another peak. And if there's the exact same fall from peak to trough, bond yields on a 10-year treasury should go to 4%. Now, no one knows for sure that's exactly what's going to happen, and this is kind of a contrarian kind of viewpoint. You know, think about it, though. What happens to all these experts? All of them. They keep recommending a position when it succeeds. And they keep recommending, oh, it's been successful. I'm going to recommend more of it. It's more successful. I'm going to recommend more of it. It's more successful. I'm going to recommend more of it. And that's what happens. And when they get to a maximum, it falls. The biggest example of the biggest push was the .com in our recent history. Everybody was jumping on the bandwagon with .com. You gotta have tech exposure. You gotta buy all these telecom stocks, all these IPOs. You gotta have them in your portfolio. And if you did, you are still, after 14 years, lower than you were at the peak in 2000, the beginning of 2000. You're still below that low. And all these experts kept telling you to keep buying and keep buying and buying. There's a point where you can't keep buying. I don't know where that point is, everybody. Don't think anybody knows. There's no bell. There's nothing that tells you exactly. It doesn't happen. And everybody, including myself, will be wrong. But no one can pick the top. No one can pick the bottom. Okay, someone could get lucky. Don't get me wrong. You can get lucky and pick a top or a bottom. But, yeah, that's luck. And if you keep saying it's the top, it's the top, it's the top, or it's the bottom. If you keep saying it, eventually you're going to be right, aren't you? So you got to be real careful with this. And be very careful with the statistics I'm quoting you. I can tell you this. This is simple. I can tell you that it is at an extreme. The recommendation of bond exposure is at an extreme. Okay, so if it's at an extreme, does that mean everybody who wants to buy bonds are already in bonds? 10-year treasury, the recommendation by the newsletters telling you to be very bullish on bonds. I can't say that because we don't know where the top is. I can just tell you it's at an extreme. Could it get more extreme? Yes. Could this be the top? Yes. All you can do is use different indicators to tell you is this should be or close to or how we should be. This is where it can be, and this is what I'm going to base my theory on. You can do that. And you could say, you know what, I've made enough money on this, and I'm going to get out. You can say that too. There's nothing wrong with those thinking, that kind of thinking at all. Okay? When you buy and sell stocks, you sign up for an up and down ride, right? That's what you expect. Sometimes gains or losses of value seem completely logical. And other times, you just scratch your head and wonder, what the heck's going on? Like when a company announces higher earnings this quarter and then stock falls sharply. What? So how do you make sense of all that? In general, it's best to ignore the very short-term movements. Bonds, stocks, just ignore the very short-term movements. And trust into your research. Does your research tell you the stock is overvalued, undervalued, or is it? Trust the research. Yeah, it's not always going to be right, but it tends to be right. It should be right if you're doing it properly. So if you believe it's a strong company and it might be best to hold that stock for the long term and just ignore all the short-term down movements and just hold on to it. Perhaps you bought it for the dividend and the dividend's consistent and goes up every year. There's no reason to get out then necessarily. And now, of course, there's no guarantee. Okay? No guarantee. So look at the technicals, look at the fundamentals, and if you don't know what the technicals or fundamentals are, you're not ready to buy stocks. But the fundamentals are the stock's earnings ability, its sales, the increase its sales, increase its earnings, its debt level, its return on equity, return on assets, its all those fundamental statistics. And technicals is looking at a chart. Where is the chart? Where is the stock now in relation to its price in the past? Where should it go based on its valuation using the fundamentals? Take a look at the chart. Now, if you have questions on this topic or any other money matter, it's time to check in right now at 888-99-CHART. Or, you know, send me a note, personal note. I'll answer that. Just click on Contact Steve on InvestTalk.com.
A reminder about our weekly e-newsletter. You can try it for a month, really at no risk. There's a money-back guarantee. It's less than $10 a month, delivered every Friday to your email box. Sign up right now on InvestTalk.com.
Hi, my name is John from Freeman. I would like to ask you about the Century Bank. I'm thinking of buying it. What do you take on it? I will listen to you next broadcast. Thank you.
Okay, it's called Century Bank, Inc., Bancorp, Inc., Century Bancorp, Inc. It's a very, very small holding company for Century Bank and Trust operating 26 offices in 19 cities and towns in Massachusetts. It's a market cap of $196 million, which is very, very small. Very few shares in the float, 3.4 million. It only trades about 5,000 shares a day, so that's very, very small and very low liquidity. Now, if you're looking at the stock, it's going to repurchase 300,000 of its own shares, but that's about 10%, which is quite a bit. Okay, quite a bit. Insiders have been buying, I can tell you that. The PE is only 9, that's low. Return on equity is only 11%, that's not high. And the dividend yield is 1.4. The growth rate in sales is like 3 or 4%. So it's not a strong grower. So it's not going to deserve a much higher PE than 9. You know, it's just not. Management owns 5%, and the funds have been steady for a year. No new funds buying or selling. But Insider has been very consistent buying the stock over the last couple of years. They like what they're doing. So it's pretty decently profitable. I don't have next year's estimates. It's not up here, so I can't tell you. But according to the numbers, it's pretty consistent growth, but it's low growth, not fast growth. It's a $35 stock, and I think it's worth probably around, $35 to $40. It's not got a lot of upside potential necessarily. It could easily go down to 33 because that's where it's been trading at for a long time. It's not very exciting. It's not for me. Too small of a bank. It's just not for me. Too illiquid. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Time to give me a call. Q2. We're going to get GDP numbers for the second quarter tomorrow. This will be the first look at the second quarter GDP numbers. And the experts are calling for a 3.1% increase in gross domestic product for the second quarter after a 2.9% decrease the first quarter. Put those two quarters together and you have a virtually flat first half of the year, right? And try to remember that this first number is going to get revised. Big time. Big time revision. There'll be two revisions about 30 days from now, and at the end of the third quarter, they'll revise final revision for the second quarter. But this first number is where everybody's going to look at and go, if it's a strong disappointment, the market will tank. If it comes in about what they say, I don't think it'll do much to the market. It won't hurt it, that's for sure, I don't think. If it comes in much higher, that would be a surprise. So anything below or high, that would be a surprise, and it's up. It depends on what the market wants to do. Now, I think you need to understand that one of the reasons why the first quarter GDP was revised so much was all about Obamacare. Now, I know everybody says, oh, you're blaming Obamacare. No. This has nothing to do with blame. This has everything to do with the government trying to estimate how much was spent on health care costs, because that makes up part of the GDP. And in the first quarter, they estimated the increase in costs, healthcare spending, was going to be $40 billion, when in fact, it fell $6.4 billion. And remember, spending on healthcare adds to the GDP. So they estimated $40 billion spending, which actually ended up being shrinkage. And that's why they were so off the first quarter. One of the main reasons. Of course, they're going to talk about the weather, and that's another reason. But, looking at the details, healthcare spending is going to be a very difficult thing to project because it's new. We don't know. And they're going to have that same problem with this GDP. And it means that they don't know if they're going to overshoot or undershoot. Now, I guarantee you they're going to be less aggressive in their spending numbers, so they will probably become closer to what the real numbers are. But that's something that's going to be difficult for them, meaning the government, because they don't have all the numbers at the first look of the GDP. Maybe we shouldn't get quarterly GDP numbers, but we do. But that 3.1% is what everybody thinks it's going to be tomorrow. That's what everybody thinks it's going to be, all the experts. And if you've read or heard me on the radio or read my book, Above Average Investing for the Average Investor, you know that I say unequivocally that experts are always wrong. Always wrong. Now, does that mean they don't get lucky and they never get lucky and get it right once in a while? Yeah, they get it right once in a while. They get lucky. But they're always wrong. It's a matter of degree. Look how much wrong they were in the first quarter GDP. Look, it's always wrong. These are estimates. They don't know for sure yet. They won't know. If you have a money question on your mind, get to me before the end of the hour. We have just enough time for your call at 888-99-CHART.
Thanks for being a podcast subscriber, and we do want to hear your investing experiences. We've all grown over the years through our experiences, good and bad. You get to be anonymous, and the rest of us will enjoy knowing that we're not the only one to make a turn when maybe we should have gone straight. So we hope you'll join us on the podcast. Thanks for listening.
This is Invest Talk. 1 hour of conversation about your money. Check in right now, 888-99-CHART, as we move into the final segment of the day, but there's still time for your call.
888-992-4278. That's our number. If you want to give me a call, you have time to get on the air. Do you know who John Hussman is? John Hussman, H-U-S-S-M-A-N. Not sure if Justin talked about this yesterday, but he is pretty much a bear market guy. I don't want to say he's always bearish, but he's not. But he's pretty bearish pretty early in most of the cycles, okay? He says the stock market is beyond the 1929 and 2000 bubble. It's higher than that. Now, I'll have you know that he did very poorly last year because he thought so last year, too. And he's, you know, in one of his funds, a strategic growth fund, he's down 1.5% this year. Now, there's other funds that are more with better returns, that are more bullish. But it's very interesting. He feels there is no doubt that we are in, the stock valuations are in bubble. When everybody suspends valuations, they don't believe the Fed is going to let the market fall or that they can stop the market falling because of what they're doing, that they can just pump more money in and they will stop any collapse in stock prices. If that was true, why didn't they stop 2008 collapse? They can't. There are certain points that they can't. They're not all powerful. But it's the belief in them, according to him, the belief in the Federal Reserve that it's better to hold risky assets because it's safer than holding non-risky assets. And I can pretty much tell you that's pretty true. That people believe that if they buy high dividend pay and blue chip stock, that they'll be just fine. Well, you will until the market collapses. Look what happened in 2000, 2008. Market went down, the S&P went down 45% in 2008. And those are all full of blue chip stocks. You can have that. I don't necessarily believe that that's going to happen, but I don't want people to suspend the belief that it won't happen. This is part of my concern, is too many people are too bullish. And you want to know who's not bullish right now? Who's pulling money out of the market? And who's putting money in the market? Institutional investors are pulling money out. Institutional investors are pulling money out. Who's putting money in? Mutual funds, ETFs. Money's coming into the market. Who puts money in ETFs and mutual funds? Primarily coming from individuals. Institutional investors. Now, when I say institutional investors, I'm talking about pension funds and, you know, big endowments, different, you know, pool, dark pools. These are all, quote, unquote, smart money. Sometimes they're not so smart. Don't just assume that they know what they're doing. That's not always true. If that was true, look at all the hedge funds that lose money. They've lost a ton of money. So they don't always write. But you know what? You want to pay attention to what they're doing. Don't hesitate to call me with your question or share your investing experience. Love to talk to you. Tell us about the mix in your portfolio. 888-99-CHART, how you reach us. You can do it anytime you want.
Hey, Steve and Justin, thank you for your show. Just wanted to see what you think about COVIDian. That's ticker symbol COV. That's COV. Thank you very much. I'm thinking about buying it.
Okay. COVIDian PLC. It is out of Ireland. Irish developer of medical devices, pharmaceutical, imaging products, and medical supplies for clinical and home settings. They made $3.72 in 2013 per share, $3.72. Now this year, $4.01, up 8%. Next year, and up another 10% to $4.42. Sales growth has been very consistent, about 3 or 4% for the last, couple of years. You know, so that's good. The chart, it was trading very steadily between 65 and 70, and then here in June, huge jump up in price. Now, you need to find out why. What caused that huge jump up? Was it earnings? Was it someone coming in to buy them? And I have a feeling that's a possibility because of the way it's been trading since then. Let me see if I can find some news on that. To be acquired by Medtronic for 93.22. So don't buy it. You know, Medtronic's buying it. You don't have any upside potential here. The company's going to disappear because Medtronic's going to own it. So it's not time to buy it. Don't buy this one. Might be a great stock, but it's going to be folded into a bigger company. Before we close for the day, you should see a list of the webinars available to our InvestTalk insiders covering a wide range of InvestTalk topics and special white papers on subjects like managing a bond portfolio. I'm Portfolio Manager Steve Peasley. On behalf of Justin Klein, everyone at KPP Financial, I thank you for listening and being part of the program today. And please join again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.